Hello, I'm Lisa Hopkins, host of Women of Power and Spirit, Healing and Awakening in the Sacred Feminine. In this series, we are exploring the depths of the Sacred Feminine in real life. When I refer to the Sacred Feminine, I'm talking about the kind of energetic qualities or yin nature within us all that is necessary for living a balanced, healthy, and happy life. The qualities of the Sacred Feminine or yin nature of a person include stillness, compassion, receptivity, intuition, creativity, that deep, quiet place within us that beckons us to open up more fully to our potential, not through more action, but rather through greater clarity and inner peace. I've met many women that have nearly died or died or struggled, died and returned, by the way, they're able to talk about it now, and struggled in their lives because their lives were spinning out of balance in their desire to achieve or in their attachments to beliefs and practices that no longer serve them. I'm one of those women, so I know what it takes to finally stop everything and settle into truthful awareness of yourself. Many of us experience moments of revelation when our spiritual gifts open and we are finally able to be who we truly are. In those moments, when we have stopped and we have allowed that self-awareness to flow through, and then in the sharing of our stories, every woman can find hope. And now we are going to listen to one of those stories of hope. I have with me here today Jules Marchand. And she was taken away from her mother when she was only 2 years old, if you can imagine that, and placed in foster care. By the time she was five, she had been in three different homes. She believes that without those challenges that made her independent and resilient, she might not even be around today. Jules is a gifted intuitive, transformational healer, and inspirational teacher. As a practical mystic, she guides individuals in understanding and resolving that which keeps them from experiencing their deeper gifts and truth of who they really are. Her current interests are in developing with others a pathway that introduces and guides humanity to innovative ideas, services, and products that produce a positive impact in the way people live in their daily lives with the opportunity to awaken to love and fulfillment. And I am so excited you're here with me today, Jules. Welcome.
Thank you, Lisa. I'm very excited and very grateful to be here with you today.
Oh, beautiful. Well, you've got quite a story, lady. I was thinking about that before we got started. I thought 2 years old to five, those are some of the most powerful formative years in our lives. The very, very beginning of our sense of rootedness and who we are as humans. And you were in three different homes before you were 5 years old. That had to be just an incredible experience.
Well, yeah. I mean, as a kid, you know, you don't have the capacity to really do much self-reflection, you know, as a little child. But over the years, I did, you know, and I had to kind of reweave some pieces, you know, that the fibers, I call them the fibers of my being, were a little disconnected, you know, as if it was like a broken shawl that had been woven and the fibers came undone. So that took a little bit of time in my life. But I was in three different ones, that, not because of me, but the first couple were just elderly senior citizens, and it turned out to have a two-year-old, and my sister, who was about five at the time, we were just too much for them. So we went to another family that was a couple was a little bit younger, and that was going along pretty well until my sister's father, I mean different fathers, was gaining custody of her, and they decided they better split us up, you know, now because she was going to be leaving, and so they sent me to a third couple, and then she went back with her father. So yeah, I mean, there's a lot I could say about it, you know. I guess, and it is so far back in the memory body often, at, you know, these days that I look back at that and I go, wow, you know, that kind of taught me about non-attachment really early on, even though I didn't know it, mm-hmm. and that that life is impermanent and all kinds of things can happen. when you really look at life and how our whole society is set up for security, like we should get insurance and we should do this and we should do that and, you know, make life safe. We're always trying to make it safe. And as a woman, that women are particularly geared towards security and safety because of children. You know, it's in our DNA. And the true nature of life is not that it's not safe, but that this idea of security isn't out there. It's what we garner and generate and cultivate, I should say, versus generate, cultivate within our being.
Mm-hmm.
You know, really... that's the place that I learned to look inside for that strength, that courage, that nurturing, whatever it is that was required. It doesn't mean I also didn't reach outside at different points in my life, but it's an inside job when it comes down to it.
Oh, my goodness. And what a young age to be learning that. I mean, that's very young. So you said that's what you learned to do was to go inward. Can you talk about that a little bit, like an example where you really had to go inward to find your security and your sense of who you were?
Well, I would say that that's a really good question, by the way. I would say that from a young age, I started doing some things that, you know, I didn't really think about. You know, again, you don't do them. You just kind of called to them. And in this case, I think I was called towards what we'll call God or spirit, you know, from a young age. And the way that looked, at least my first memory of that, is I would pray. And I didn't really have any real formal church or anything like that, you know, that had to do with prayer until a little bit later in my life. But I would just pray. I mean, for example, I had an alcoholic mother, and she was a single mom. And, you know, there were times where she looked like she was going to die. You know, she was like in a stupor, or she was having dry heaves, you know, and I was a little kid. And I can remember like going and hiding in the corner and praying, you know, to please God, don't let my mother die, you know, at a young age. So there was a part of me that got set up pretty early to go to a higher energy field, let's put it that way, you know, to a higher source for assistance, you know, in my life and in my challenges, you know, at that time, and my fears, to take my fears there, you know, and my heart. So, I mean, I don't know if that's a really good example or not, but that's just kind of what evolved. And then when I was almost 10, I was placed in a girls' home because, again, my mother, she didn't feel like she could properly take care of me, you know, and that I would be safer, you know, in this type of an environment. And she was probably right when I look back on it, and I kind of am very grateful that I had this experience, even though it was out of the normal, and there were other things that were sort of woundings that I had to work through, you know, image things, you know, like going to a public school and living in a girl's home where you get picked up by a guy in a van, you know, and your friends are going, well, what's that about, you know, your school friends, or things like that that were hard to explain, and you kind of have embarrassment moments about, you know, not having a father or a mother, you know, or whatever. But we were required to go to church, and they determined which church I was going to, and I wound up at a Baptist church. And it was Sunday school. We didn't go up to the big, you know, the big, you know, place where everybody sits, you know, the adults. We would go down to Sunday school. And somehow I really liked the stories, so I would ask the teacher if I could borrow the felt board stories, and I would take them home to the home, the girls' home, and I'd reteach them to some of the little kids in the home using the felt boards. You know, the teacher, the Sunday school teacher, let me take them. And, you know, so early on, although I didn't really discover this really fully until later in my life, I was a teacher, and I didn't know it. You know, I at the time, I just found something about that that really interested me. I couldn't tell you what. I was too young. But I found an audience for it, you know, these littler kids who were in the girls' home with me. And, you know, so I tell people in my life, and especially my clients that I work with, when we have hardships in our life or challenges or things that happen that are out of our control, which in my opinion most things are out of our control, like a loved one dying or a separation or whatever, is the sooner you can find the gift in that hardship, the quicker you heal or receive the blessing and the learning of what that obstacle or challenge was really about, for one, so you don't get stuck there, you know. I think that's the biggest thing that happens with people, which I've been fortunate in many ways to keep moving, is that people get stuck in the emotional body around events that are just so sometimes horrendous, sometimes much more challenging than the things that I feel I've experienced in my life. And they never get beyond it, you know, never get to the through it, you know, the pain and the suffering. They get stuck in that pain body. So I got really good as a healer in helping people move through those places that they couldn't go through alone, because often we can't go through these alone. We need help. We need facilitation. We need a compassionate heart, or we need something, someone that helps us get clarity and holds our hand, which is what I sought out in times in my life where I could no longer take myself any further, you know, in my own development. So I'm all for getting help when you need it, but not getting stuck there.
That's so true, that being able to see the gift makes such a difference. You realize some part of your consciousness set this up. Would you agree?
Yes. Well, you know, I wouldn't say that I got there right away. It wasn't until I was, you know, a little bit older that I started framing things that way. Because my own path took me to that door, you know, that door of choice. Of choosing to either stay in the sadness, and the sadness that kind of had haunted a good part of my early life, you know, that was kind of underlying, I might even call it low-grade depression that you almost don't even know is there because it's so much a part of your life. And it's not like bipolarism or manic depressive, you know, where you kind of, it's big, but it's this low-level depression, and so you kind of just don't even recognize it until something happens one day and you go, oh my God, you know, I'm living from this place of where my energy is depressed, you know, squashed, sat on, because I wasn't able to get to for a while what was underneath that, you know. So the tendency I found in my own life, and also as I've worked with clients in a healing capacity, is that we try and keep at bay the things that are uncomfortable or that are painful. It's almost like holding up a huge brick wall sometimes. And often we don't even know we're doing it, you know, until something, you know, the bricks start falling off, you know, or something. And we are forced to look at it. In my case, I was lucky in that I somehow recognized it, probably with the help of some genius person I was working with, you know, for my own mental health and so forth, and I made the choice to deal with it. So I didn't get hit with a lot of 2x4s, which some people do, you know, like that's what I call them, cosmic 2x4s, where we're forced to wake up, you know, to these things that are holding us back. And so in my case, I became aware of this underlying sadness, depression, and I remember someone saying to me, that was a facilitator, said to me, you know, the degree to which you can experience your joy and your bliss is the degree to which you allow yourself to also experience your sadness. And so that was like a big clue. And it took me a while to kind of figure out what that really meant for me. But it meant allowing myself really to be okay with being aware of the sadness, and so I didn't have to keep holding up the brick wall. And once I allowed myself to start to move through that, things started opening up, and I found a great gift in that and what was underneath the sadness, you know. And so the walls came down. I mean, I've had a major awakening in my life, but when I talk about just my own healing journey in terms of understanding my ego and understanding my core wounds and also my value, which are kind of tied up together often, don't you find that's true?
Absolutely.
Yeah. So the our true gifts are often come out of our wounds or the things that we've experienced in our life that are difficult. Now, that's not the only place our gifts come from, but that's one of them if we're paying attention. Our greatest strengths and so forth often lie there. And so once I started realizing the truth of that for my own life, I started looking for the gifts, you know, when I was in my challenges. So, and then I got to a place where in my life I started, like, welcoming them, you know, mm-hmm. welcoming the challenges, which the nature of them changed once I got a handle on the childhood stuff, you know, the things I was set up for, you know, that everybody is, you know, as you're growing, you kind of get programmed for different things because of the things that you witness or the things that you encounter that come from your environment, the programmed, conditioned things. And so I was kind of set up for that low-level sadness or that shock that went into my system when I was two, when I was taken away from my mother, you know, or maybe even when I was in her womb. I was, my mother got pregnant while she was married and had an affair, and I am the product of that affair. And back in the late 50s, women weren't having abortions, you know, didn't have access that was safe. And my mother said she never considered it. So I was fortunate I got to come into this world, you know,
mm-hmm.
In the, you know, where it could have turned out that I didn't, you know. But so looking for the blessings and the gifts in a life, you know, my perspective is at this point in my life that I've known this for a long time, there are no accidents. You know, there are the things that we experience, they're in our path, and that everything has purpose, even though they don't feel that way all the time. They don't feel comfortable. They're horrible. It's not that I'm saying that, you know, people who are experiencing starvation, that, oh, that's their karma and their path. I'm not really saying that. I'm saying that from my own experience, that once I learned to accept my path and the way that it was and all the childhood things that happened and those all those things, I was able to get them on a deeper level. And what I would say, integrate in the shadow of those things and take the gifts and the strength and the resiliency that was bred through those challenges and the independence that it gave me, my ability to be very, you know, I'm extremely independent. I've had to learn the other. how to be more dependent. Yes, right. That's a healthy thing. And how to share, you know, my life with people and not be afraid that they would think less of me, you know, and my challenges and so forth. I had to go the other way.
It's just beautiful. I really so appreciate what you're saying about being willing to be with that pain, be present to the pain, because you're so right. We run away from it because it's uncomfortable. It's extremely uncomfortable initially. And until you've actually sat with it and been present to it and been in compassion with it, you don't know how freeing it is on the other side. The pain dissipates as we are present to it. And I know exactly what you're talking about in that energy where you begin to welcome it. It's like you bump up against this limit within you that we experience as being unworthy, not good enough, abandoned, whatever deep, deep-seated wound is being manifested
yeah.
at the moment. And you realize,
yeah.
oh, it's just a temporary limit. It's not everything. And if I'm present with it, I'll be free. Is that what you experienced? Is that what I heard?
Well, I think that's true, and I don't think it just happened in an instant, although I have had some instant awakenings that happened in an instant, which I'll share with you in a minute, but I think it was a gradual learning, and relearning and staying conscious of, being in the pain and not knowing what to do with it. And then as I grew, learning that pain could be my friend if I spoke to it and learned what it wanted. What did it have for me? What was it here to teach me, and or what did it need? Kind of like a gestalt. And actually, when I was a young teenager, about 16 years old, I was in a gestalt group. I managed to, I was born in New York, but when I was 15, I left and went to live with my sister in California. And she was the vision keeper for our family, and or had the vision at the time for her family to get out of New York, and I managed to do that. And I started this, I was in this gestalt group of adult women when I was a teenager, and that was a real blessing to be, learn a technique where you dialogue with the parts of yourself and with other people who aren't in the room, the people that you need to talk to from your whatever you need to say to them, to have an outlet for discovery as well as for that energy that is, painful, coming back to pain, pain and suffering, or the things that aren't clear in us, So I was lucky at a young age to encounter that and be a part of it, and also to be doing yoga and meditating and, things like that. And I was a teenager too. It wasn't, I did what I could. I understood what I could at that age. And as an adult, that begins to grow. And I didn't stop. I was in, I guess you could, in one sense, I was an experience junkie, but I would move towards things that made sense if they looked like they held a key for me, a key for my own waking up or my own healing. So early on, I did yoga and gestalt and meditation and and EST, which was a personal development seminar group, and on and on. Adult Children of Alcoholics work, as it came on the scene, things like that that helped me repair and to understand my own psychology so that I wouldn't keep being subject to it, that I could have enough awareness where I could choose, because it's really about choice and the difference between going from surviving to thriving. There's I had a huge gap there for a long time. I didn't know how to thrive. I only knew how to survive. And so it was that process of not always conscious, but as conscious as I could, that moved me along, and at the same time burst in a deeper way my spiritual longing and my spiritual self as a mystic and also as a healer and a what we call a coach or a spiritual guide. I gave birth to that naturally.
Started that journey of really looking for what would allow you to heal and for you to find out what was beyond what you were experiencing at a very young age. And I really appreciate what you're saying about staying diligent, that you were persistent and you kept following what you were drawn to that seemed to have meaning and purpose for you. Because I think it's easy in that journey to start with something and say, oh, it's not working. And often what's happened is we haven't taken it deeply enough, so why it's not working. And when we're willing to keep showing up, there are those moments of breakthrough. And in my own experience, Jules, has been that then that waking up to that sense of oh, it can be good. It can be. I can be happy. I don't have to be sad all the time. I can have a lot more happiness than pain. I can really get who I am. I can experience the freedom of my soul. That starts happening more quickly. Intuitive experiences, psychic awareness starts opening up because I'm not bound up in my limits anymore, but it is a process over time, isn't it? And diligence, that's what I hear your story.
Even though I can go out there into the cosmic realm, you know, pretty readily, I'm a pretty practically based person. You know, like let's ground what we can and be practical in taking our steps. And I, as a coach, of course, I'm oriented towards taking action. But sometimes that action is to do nothing, you know. It's more about choices, I guess. The actions can be choices in how we perceive and how we think and where we focus our energy and how do we make change and how do we change habits, especially because we're conditioned, you know, how do we change? So I've studied, like I'm a clinical hypnotherapist, I study hypnosis because as I worked with people's bodies for years and years and years as a body therapist, I taught shiatsu for 8 years and also worked, you know, many, many years in that realm. I found that, you know, what was going on in their bodies often had to do more with what was going on in their heads. And I wanted a way to actively work with, legally, to work with the creative mind and the impact that the creative mind can have on all the levels of our existence, you know, in our physical, mental, emotional, psychological, and spiritual realms. And so I went and I did very extensive training in hypnotherapy all the way through medical hypnotherapy. I've been trained as a medical and intuitive also, as well as a few other things, you know, energy work and, biokinesiology, so I can, you know, test people and muscle test people. And I tend to use a pendulum. It's been my tool as a clairsentient. I feel things through the body and know things. And once in a while I hear and see things. I've been free as a professional most of my life to pursue the learning that and the therapies that really helped me. So then I would turn around and study them so that I could help other people. So I digested it, went, wow, that was really powerful. Let me go see what else I can learn so I can help other people. And in each case, they weren't always like conscious decisions. It's like those things were brought to me, you know, in such a way that they were recognizable as my own next steps, you know. And I would just follow them. And that's how I got into coaching especially, you know. It was like people just started asking me to help them grow their businesses. And I went, okay, and I called it Creative Business Consulting. And then a friend said, oh, what you're doing is like coaching. You should check it out. And so I did, and I did those trainings. You know, so there's lots of, if we're paying attention and we're asking life to assist us, you know, I'm talking about the invisible world of life and how it shows up in the physical world in the form of people and things. It's always answered. It's just that often we don't hear the answer because we're not open or we don't believe we can have an answer. So we cut it off. You know, we don't pay attention. Our receptors aren't turned on. And I find that especially when I work with women who are the natural receivers in life, you know. Everyone says, oh, women are the givers, but in our culture, but I might beg to differ on that. As I've studied the sacred feminine and the path from that perspective, in my own life, I've discovered that mine were shut off, and I had to learn to turn them on so that I could receive, that I could help everybody else. But when it came to me, I wasn't letting myself receive. And so I'm very conscious now when I request something that I make sure that I keep my own doors, my own channels open to the answer or to the solution or to the gift of that, you know, is coming my way. And so I think the more we do that, the more, as women especially, the more satisfied we are and the more we begin to notice our own magnetism and that the path of the feminine is about magnetizing to oneself those things that are needed in life or wanted and desired, especially when we get into and allow ourselves to have our healthy longing, you know, life will provide those things. So, you know, having said that, I would say that it's been a trust walk, you know, a real, for my own life, you know, trusting that my needs are met. You know, and as you can imagine, I had a very disjointed childhood and a very one that, you know, took the foundation out from underneath me. So learning to trust and to feel supported in particular took time. You know, took time to understand that life does support me and that life supports all of us. It's just often we have our pathways for that support not open, you know, or clouded or turned off. Because no one teaches you how to turn them on, and we don't know they're turned off because, you know, they just happened. Things happened to us, you know, turned us off. Fear, doubt, life experiences. Like, if I go back and beyond the initial part of my life, I think that one of the biggest challenges came when my older sister died suddenly. I was 17. And she was about 8 years older than me. She was more my mother, you know, in many ways than my mother was. We were very attached to each other. But even at that age, I already knew about reincarnation. I don't know how I knew about it, but I did. And I knew that her soul went on, you know, but I still had to deal with the absence of her in my life and what did that mean, you know, and how could I go on? You know, so we meet these challenges in different ways depending upon our worldview and our beliefs and, you know, what life tells us often instead of what we can discover. Does that make sense to you?
Yes, I love that concept of what we can discover because that's really addressing the unknown, which I find in my work to be very much a part of our fear around the sacred feminine or our lack of ability to welcome it, welcome that yin energy into our lives, is that it's very much unknown to us. And if you, it is vast. It is difficult to explain or put into words. It's an experience of the self. And you, as you beautifully described as magnetism being one of the very powerful energies of the sacred feminine, that we hold ourselves back from our unknown, and it's the unknown in which we, the mystery is really revealed to us. So it takes tremendous self-conscious awareness to say, oh, that's what I'm up against. I'm up against my fear of the unknown, and I'm just going to open to it anyway. I love what you said about your business coaching. Sometimes the action is to take no action.
Because yeah, absolutely.
We should just be still. You know?
Yes, absolutely. I totally agree with you around that, and to be in the mystery of life, to allow that mystery to be there and allow it to unfold. You know, what occurs to me, Misa, is that our culture is that we all grew up in Western culture, I'm talking about. We grew up in a masculine culture, you know, and the values of a masculine culture is success and climb the, and a certain view of success. I'm not down on success, but it's a certain view of success. And how you go about achieving it is like, you know, very linear, not circular is the way I think of the feminine, or spiral. You know, it's more linear, like going up a ladder. And certain things are rewarded and other things aren't. Like, you don't get rewarded for having an intuitive insight. You get rewarded for making a lot of money. Or you get rewarded for, the you know, selling a lot of widgets or, you know, passing a test, you know, getting a good grade on it and things like that. Now, none of those things are wrong. It's just that there's a whole part of life that has been left out, you know, in terms of what we value and lost in our culture, and that is the feminine side of nature. Now, we find it in art, we find it in beauty, we find it in caring and being cherished and receptive and and honoring the intuitive knowing parts of ourselves. So my pathway has been, you know, honoring that intuition, and I teach other people, men and women both, how to tune into their own intuition or their deeper inner knowing and awareness, and how to trust it, because it's always there, but it, sometimes it's in the back seat, and it can be so buried in all the junk that's on that back seat that we're not really paying attention. And if we do notice it, then we're not trusting it. So it's a matter of bringing it into the front seat and allowing it to be honored and put into a practice, you know, in the sense that we move forward with those insights that we have. It's funny, when I was a teenager and living in Berkeley, an older friend of mine who was probably in his 30s, he started studying at the Berkeley Psychic Institute, which had recently opened while I was there, living there as a kid. And he invited me to come over one night for the readings, the student readings. I kind of remember getting there a bit late, and it was in a house that had been converted into, you know, this school. And so it's upstairs in one of what would have been a bedroom, you know. And they were doing the readings, and then everything was over, and I was leaving. And a man came up to me, and I could not tell you to this day what he looked like. I only remember that he was tall, taller than me. I kind of remember my head kind of coming to his chest level. And he said to me, "You're a trance channel. If you want training, you know, come and see me." And I remember freaking out and running the other way, you know. And what I ran to was the spiritual community, which then became my life for the next 6 years. And I lived in this spiritual community, and I learned all about energy and sound and color and vibration and, you know, the distinction between light and what we might consider the absence of light, or sometimes evil, or the energy veil. And so, you know, I guess I chose, I mean, that was obviously my path, because I didn't go the other way, you know, or I would have gone the other way. But that inner knowing and those intuitive insights, whether they're this, you know, the whether they're visual or hearing or knowing or feeling, have a way of entering one's life, because that's still who you are, you know. And the more we honor those and we recognize and begin to learn what our own pathways are, the more they'll grow. Just like any muscle that you exercise, if you start to exercise a certain intuitive muscle, then it gets stronger. And in many cases in life, it is our sixth sense. And in many cases, everybody knows they have it, but they don't really give it or empower it in a way that really shifts one's life. Now, I have found that in my own life that has really been my path and my pathway underlying most of everything I've done, that and relying on my spiritual connection, you know, from a young age. And I don't know that there's much else. There only is the present moment, you know. And really, if we could all honor the present moment and not think it's supposed to be other than it is, then we have the continuum in each moment to be authentic and keep growing from there, you know. But I will say that I am a proponent of traditional therapies that help one understand one's psyche, you know, one's psychology, the wounds, understand what they are, work through some of them, but not get stuck there, you know. I think there's a point where you know, you could process all of your wounds and all of your everything, and then start processing your past lives, you know. But they don't help you wake up. They don't really shift you. It's just more food for mind, you know, or opportunity to, not opportunity, but a trap in a way of the mind, you know.
Yes, so, I remember years ago saying, you know, it was something I was extolling as a virtue. And he looked at me and said, "But that's a great place to also hide, isn't it? You know, anything that can free us can also become our trap."
Yes, yes. So it's just being, my path led me, you know, after studying many types of things, you know, everything from starting at Sunday school to the I Ching to some of the religions and Zen. And I love Zen because it's based on the breath And whenever you're lost, remember when I was lost, I would always come back to the breath. And, you know, it calms you down, centers you, and then, you know, the inner life can be heard. You know, you can hear it and feel it when you go into the breath. And so I've studied a lot of things for myself and then as a way to assist other people. And I've come to the place of non-dualism, you know, of that awakened spirit, which kind of happened spontaneously for me.
Would you mind talk about that a little bit? Because I love what you said. Awakened,
yeah, sure.
Life.
Yeah, I was having this experience back in like around 96, 97, where I felt like I was falling into a black hole. And I would start to go down that hole, and then part of me would freak out, and it was like backtracking out of a hole. That's the only way I can describe it, you know, even though I wasn't actually physically falling down a hole. It felt like, you know, consciousness always falling down a hole. And I didn't know what it was, really. And it just so happened that a friend of mine who was my hypnotherapy instructor had just come back from India. And another person that I knew here in Boulder, where I live, whose consciousness was sort of already awake. And I mentioned it to both of them, and one said, why don't you come over and let's see if we can stabilize that space, you know, that black hole space or something. And I said, oh, that sounds good, you know, so I went. And something shifted, but it wasn't, I don't think it was full. And the other person I went to, and it was also useful in kind of looking at some pieces, but it wasn't nothing, it didn't quite change anything. And then this same friend who was the hypnotherapy teacher, he decided to teach the process that he was doing with people that was helping them wake up, help their consciousness wake up. And I said to him, well, why don't we do, you know, have you thought about doing it in a workshop? So he said, yeah, I'm thinking about it, but I'll only do it if you'll help me, because I also had a small promotion business at the time and, you know, a list, and he had a list, and, you know. So he came back and said, okay, I want to do this, you know, help me, and, you know, we'll move it forward. So we started doing these workshops, which he called Radical Awakening. And I was in every workshop, and I promoted every workshop. And somewhere in the middle of all that, I was in, and it was a process where we actually took people through where basically their true self woke up, you know, became present in their life and in their consciousness. And it happened just about everybody. I'd say like, you know, 98% of everyone who took the workshops, and everyone learned that process. But through that whole thing, I was in my apartment one day, my house, and I was walking around, not thinking about anything in particular, and just in a flash, literally in a flash, and I burst out laughing, I suddenly realized, I guess is the way to describe it, that I had no control of anything, that control was just an illusion. And it wasn't just like a thought, oh, I have no control of anything. It was a full living experience in my body. And the other thing that happened just about instantaneously was the complete awareness of non-separation, that nothing in life had any separation. Now, I would say that I had the idea of that in my life, you know, that we're all one. You know, how could we not be? You know, our DNA is all connected, that kind of stuff. But this was like an experience in my physical body where what happened was my heart center in the middle of my chest started buzzing. You know, all at once, this kind of all happened at once. You know, I laughed out loud, my body started buzzing. I had this awareness that there was no separation, that if people were getting killed on the other side of the world, I was also dying. Some part of me, some aspect of me was dying. It might not be my physical body, but something was dying. And that, you know, everything was connected. And that I had no, whatever I thought was control in my life, maybe was just some preferences. But that the thing that was really moving life was much deeper. And I call that consciousness, that there's this big field of consciousness that is the underlying element of all of life, that is that matrix of, or that, I don't know, that some people call the metamorphic field, you know, whatever. I experienced it. And in my own being, my heart center buzzed for months and months, and my level of sensitivity was really heightened. So I went back to the workshops, and I could, like, sense just about everybody when they arrived at that place of their own knowing. It was really uncanny time, and it lasted for a while. And then my body got sick within, I don't know, 4 months of that time. My immune system went haywire, and that was the challenge, to stay aware and understand that this was just happening to my body, and it affected my energy level and my mind and, you know, everything. And it just so happened that at that same time, Saturn entered my house of health astrologically, which I didn't know about until after I was mostly through all this. And Neptune was sitting on my sun, so it put me into the mists of life. And I had to hang out there and flow and trust. And everything turned to trust and flow at that point. And I had to learn to live. I didn't have to. I understood that that's what the learning was now. You know, without leading from the ego, it was dropping into the feminine now and trusting that inner womb to lead my life.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a combination of these awarenesses and this profound shift is what I would call it. And at the same time, it was profound and very simple, like getting tapped on the shoulder. And to this day, I lead people through that process when it's the appropriate thing, you know, when it's the highest priority for them. And usually
That's
the same
beautiful.
Thing happens.
Really
yeah.
Beautiful. So beautiful. And I really love that in your sharing, you're also sharing that even with that profound moment of awareness, there is still awareness that follows, and that is that, oh, now there's being true to this awareness in my life, you know? It's
yeah.
a journey. It's ongoing, and I just love what you're saying about let me frame it in my world and see if it connects, if I've interpreted properly
yeah.
what you're saying. But I think it's so easy for us to think that life is about our preferences. And
yeah.
then to realize, as you did so deeply, so profoundly, that no, we're not in control. And then to be of service in your life as you help people blossom into their own consciousness, their own intuitive awareness, because in that sacred feminine, in that intuitive awareness, we're really following greater consciousness. We're following consciousness rather than pinning everything on the importance of our preferences. Am I encapsulating this in any way accurately?
Yes. I think you got it perfectly. So, you know, I think the continuation of what you just said is, how do I translate into practical everyday living, you know? You know, when I don't have enough money to pay my bills, or, you know, the babies are hungry, or, you know, I have an abusive husband, or, you know, whatever is that, or, you know, I'm challenged in different ways, whether they're internal challenges or they're external challenges, and usually they kind of go hand in hand. And how do I find the energy or the courage to go forward, regardless of the challenge, whether it's an illness or, you know, an external thing? And, you know, how do we believe, you know, that it's possible to live from a place of awakened trust and to stay diligent, I call it diligence, to stay diligent or, I think diligence is the right word, you know. Because it's not about doing anything, it's just staying aware to it, you know, and it never goes away. You only need to wake up once, and once you wake up, it doesn't go away. It may be in the back seat sometimes, but that's all, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You just have to bring it forward. And I think one of the first steps when we're faced with, you know, major, major challenges, life-threatening and otherwise, is to remember that this is just an experience, And if we allow ourselves to believe that miracles can happen, because I've experienced numerous miracles in my life, then and we can remember to reach out and to remember that this is happening for a purpose, you know, instead of feeling sorry for ourselves. I mean, you can go there and feel sorry, but, you know, don't stay there, you know. Don't stay in the, don't stay there, because it'll keep you stuck there. And then it becomes like a pity party. But if you go, wait a minute, you know, I've got this thing happening, and I'm willing to meet it full on, even whether your consciousness is awake or not awake, you know, in a certain way, and you're willing to stay present to it and go with what makes the most sense by accessing that inner knowing, like, oh my God, you know, I need to take some action. If I don't take action, nothing's going to change, for example. So sometimes taking action, whether it's reaching out or, you know, going for counseling or, you know, talking to a best friend or going to your minister or, you know, connecting, going to get food stamps. I just told that to a friend the other day who's really struggling financially. And, you know, and it's a guy, so guys have a hard time, you know, letting people know sometimes that they're having a hard time, because that's what's enculturated into them, you know. Where women, you know, we talk a lot when we're not doing well. We talk with our friends, you know, we're a little more verbal and often. And so, and those are generalizations, of course, but, you know, I was working with this friend of mine, and I just said, look, if you don't have enough money to feed yourself, go get food stamps. You know what I mean? And get beyond that. Do what's practical. And this is a pretty awake person, you know, in a lot of ways. But when his challenges are in the practical realms of life, you know, making a living, you know, valuing what he brings to the world so much that it attracts other people. And, you know, I'd have to say that he's probably not valuing it quite enough, you know, because it really is in the spiritual realm, in his services. And he has practical skills too, but we know the economy has challenged a lot of people that way. So I'm all for staying awake to what makes sense, you know, staying awake to what's real, and not think that, you know, someone's going to discover that you're starving. You know, sometimes you have to reach out and go say, I'm starving. I need food. You know what I mean? That's the practical side of the mother. You know, that is the feminine. That's the one of the deepest elements of the feminine, is to do what's practical and make sure the children are fed. You know, I'd have to say that for my mother, even though my mother was an alcoholic, there was always food on the table. And it was, she did her best to make it nourishing food. You know, I grew up on welfare, and sometimes way back in when we were kids, welfare didn't have food stamps. You know, they gave you subsidy food, which was like flour and big chunks of Kraft cheese. And those are the kinds of things I remember, you know. And, you know, it's like, you know, sometimes we have to be humble and accept help, you know, and that's how we grow. And I know I've kind of gone back into the, you know, this realm of life again, but it's a weaving of when we're awake. Being awake doesn't mean that it's going to pay the bills. You know, we still have to bring value to who we are and what we do in the world, whether we're employed by someone or self-employed or whatever. We do what's practical. The mother does what's practical. And what feeds the children. And in this case, if you're the mother and the child, you have to take care of you, you know, and allow life to assist you, but sometimes you have to reach out. And one thing I know about life is that the call compels the answer, whether it's a call to spirit and or a call to other people, agencies, or whatever. There's typically an answer and a solution, and miracles happen, often against all odds. You know, if I look at my own life and I say, well, you know, how did I do this? I've had therapists ask me, how did you get through your childhood? How did you become who you are? You know, and I look at them and I go, gee, you know, I think I just had this circle protecting me most of my life, you know, that I was not always aware of, but mostly aware of. I stayed connected to spirit. I connected to spirit and I never let go.
Oh, you know? There you go. Oh, beautifully, beautifully.
Yeah,
said.
And so that's a good thing for people to recognize, I think, but everybody's path is unique and different and beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
And
absolutely.
It's, again, going back to that honoring of that, I think, is the important thing. And that's why I do the work that I do now, you know, Misa, really I'm really more focused on the intuitive, working on the intuitive with people, teaching them skills, helping them open up their own pathways to trust, but also working as a coach, you know, in the practical side. And but to me, and I'm very interested in what's sustainable because I'm involved in sustainability and the whole green sector of life, you know. But I would say that waking up to what truly is you and your gifts and your purpose in life, like your what I call soul purpose, and then that soul purpose will lead to the expression of that in the world through work or through avocation, either way, and that leads to satisfaction. And all of those things usually lead to a nourished life that is sustainable. So to me, that's the deepest sustainability we can have, is accessing our own inner knowing and right action, you know, and right the cultivation of those things.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say I work with a lot of people in transition. So I wouldn't say everybody, but a number of people, especially now, are people who are lost in their lives right now because of so much transition. So it's a matter of looking at where do we put the roots in, you know, where do we grow the roots now that we can grow deep and strong and be connected, sort of like the bamboo family, all their roots are connected, you know, with each other. So there's that interdependence and independence at the same time. And how do we do that in such a way that we can grow deep and strong in a path that's authentic for each person.
Beautifully said, my dear. Oh, and I love the analogy of the bamboo. I love it. So do tell us, where do we get a hold of you? How do we find out more about you?
Yeah, well, I have a website called intuitivetribe.com, and my phone number's on there, my info's on there, my private sessions, what I do in that realm. And I'm not remembering right now if my coaching's on there, but, you know, people can always call up and talk to me. We can suss out whether I'm a good match, you know. But I always recommend that people do the soul reading part because even just that alone will help them receive direction, I believe. I trust that. I work with the angelic realm often when I'm working with in these sessions with people.
They love to come help, don't they?
They do. They absolutely do.
They do. They're just waiting for us. Say, would you please give us a clue?
That's absolutely true. And so I've helped through that process of the life reading. I've helped people remember and often wake up to something they never considered before, but in particular, people who knew that early on and somehow got redirected into something else, like a parent said, no, you can't do that, you have to go do this, you know, for example. And then, you know, 50 years later, it's like, oh my God, you know, what am I supposed to be doing with my life?
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of that's going on right now. And I think that this particular service that I offer brings a lot of clarity to people around that particular issue and or amplifies what they're already doing if it's on path. I just don't think we have the time or the luxury anymore to be off path.
No, I think you're right. I think a lot of us are feeling it, and I'm just very, very grateful that you've come to share this today and that you're doing this wonderful work of helping people find their authentic path, their true path in the world. And again, I want everyone to know to go to intuitivetribe.com so you can learn more about dual sacred work in the world. And in closing, let me thank you for being who you are. What a beautiful woman with you work in the world. Oh, my goodness. And if you can move through the challenges that you have, I know that there's a lot of hope that you're inspiring for other women and men out there, that we really can take each challenge that comes into our lives, and it can actually launch us into our awakening, into the expression of who we are and our authentic selves and our sacred work in the world. So thank you for being good inspiration for all of us, Jewel.
Oh, Misa, thank you for who you are, too, right back at you. And it is such my honor, you know, and my joy to help people get where they're going. That's how I like to say it, you know. So thank you again, and I look forward to our next encounter.
Me too. And thank you to all of you who are listening. You tapped into this for some reason that you have discovered, I hope, through the course of the interview, or you will be. It'll come to your dreams tonight, or at some point it'll be, oh, that's the piece that I needed. Thank you so much. That helps to unlock some part of your world, or perhaps is affirming the incredible and wonderful work you're doing in your own life, in your process of healing and awakening. Thank you all, and I wish you well. May love, compassion, and truth prevail. Goodbye, everyone.